Hello and welcome back to this conference. My name is Jai Bristol and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very pleased to be welcoming back the wonderful somatic therapist and educator, Catherine Ripley. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So let's just dive right in. We're talking about anxiety today. For you, what is the thing you most want people to understand about anxiety?
What I want everybody to understand about anxiety is that it's there to help you. So people will sometimes balk at this idea because anxiety is an unpleasant experience. We don't like to have it. And a lot of times we can get into an adversarial relationship with our anxiety, just wanting it to go away, not wanting to deal with it anymore. But I really want people to understand that your anxiety is there to help you in some way, even if it doesn't necessarily feel like that at first. And when we can shift away from that adversarial relationship with the anxiety and shift into an understanding that it's there to help you, and even start to form more of a cooperative relationship with it, understanding that it has a good intention for us, then that opens up the opportunity that we can learn from our anxiety about the internal stuff that's going on that might be buried under the surface that we are not necessarily aware of. So I think that knowing that your anxiety is there to help you in some way creates all of this opportunity for you to actually get to know yourself better and to know the things that you need to work on.
Amazing. I'm so glad to hear you say that. I think it's such an incredible reframe for so many people, right? Because, we're taught often that all these uncomfortable feelings to sort of reject them. And so the idea that anxiety is here to help you can be quite jarring for people. And yeah, as you say, it's a really crucial reframe. So within that context, then, do you want to expand on that a bit more and say, both what you mean by that and therefore how you can work with it, in a cooperative manner?
Yeah, for sure. So it's going to look a little different for everybody, of course, but I think what it usually boils down to is that the anxiety is there to distract you away from core emotions that may be too painful for you to go into, or to distract your attention away from some core negative beliefs about yourself that may be coming up. So I'll just use myself as an example. I have this core negative belief that I don't really deserve to be happy. And so my anxiety comes in oftentimes to distract my attention away from that belief and to sort of focus my thoughts on all of these different minutiae about my life. How can I like micromanage my money, my finances, my day-to-day routine? My sleep, my relationship. How can I worry about all of those things so that my attention is distracted away from this core negative belief that is actually more uncomfortable to deal with directly than the anxiety is? So when we understand it like that the anxiety may be unpleasant, but it's actually in a lot of cases a better alternative to whatever those yucky things are underneath the surface that are kind of poking at us, but we don't really want to deal with, then it starts to become clear, like, what's the whole picture of what's really going on with you?
That makes a lot of sense. And so then, how do we manage that? How do we, yeah, how do you work with that kind of anxiety when it arises?
I think that the first step is always taking a deep breath and reminding yourself that the anxiety is there to help you in some way. And once you recognize that, there's a softening that tends to happen. I notice this with myself and the work that I do with my clients. When you can remind yourself, okay, my anxiety is here to help me, it is my ally, not my enemy. There's a little bit of relaxation and relief that kind of comes over you. And once you can kind of soften a little bit and you can recognize, okay, my anxiety is here to help me, maybe let's say thank you to it. Let's say thank you to the anxiety for trying to help you to deal with whatever this thing is. And this comes from the internal family systems model, by the way, which you don't have to remember, but just to give credit where credit is due. You say thank you to this part of you for trying to help you the way it's helping you. And then you start to actually talk to it. What are you here to help me with? What are you afraid might happen if you don't jump in here to do all of this stuff right now? And if you can actually get that dialogue going with your anxiety, it may actually tell you, well, I'm afraid that XYZ is going to happen. I'm afraid that you're going to be in pain. I'm afraid that you're going to feel embarrassed or feel ashamed. I'm afraid that people are going to abandon you, you know, whatever the fear is. And then you can start to turn your attention to working with those parts that feel very vulnerable. And if you can give some love and compassion to those vulnerable parts of you that are coming up, then you don't necessarily need the anxiety to be doing all of the work that it's doing.
Right. I really like that idea that, like, as you say, thinking of the anxiety as an ally rather than an enemy, thanking it, and then actually seeing it as it's like, it's doing quite a lot of labor, right? Like you say, it's helping yes. you. And so it's trying to distract you and support you and all of that. And so once you realize it, then you can like take over the load and then it's no longer needed, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Fantastic. And so, you know, you were talking earlier about having this core belief that you don't deserve happiness
mm-hmm.
and that the anxiety can come in to distract you from some of those feelings. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious if it can also come in to distract you if you are feeling happy and to distract you from, you know, if that's your core belief, to because I've noticed that, right? Sometimes anxiety can come in when things seem to be going well, as opposed to just when things are hard. So I'm wondering if you could say more about that and how it can distract you from those like core beliefs as well.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. That does happen a lot for a lot of people. The anxiety may feel the need to jump in when we start to experience joy and happiness, because the anxiety doesn't trust the happiness, or it doesn't trust that the happiness can be sustainable for us. One thing that comes up quite often is there's a fear within us that the happiness will get taken away at some point. And anticipating that the happiness is going to get taken away and that we're going to have this crash when that happens, that we won't be able to survive if the happiness goes away. That's when the anxiety comes in to try to deal with that problem, to deal with that fear of, oh no, my happiness is going to get taken away from me. And that's rooted in a lot of early material in your life, usually. People who have trauma histories tend to have difficulty sustaining positive affect, is how we usually refer to it. Difficulty accessing and sustaining joy and happiness and hope and optimism and all of those things. And so the anxiety can be a way of actually kind of protecting you from the good things. Even if the good things are good for you, there are parts of you that think, oh no, I can't possibly relax into this. I can't possibly accept this because something bad will happen and I have to be ready for whatever the bad thing is.
Yeah, that's very relatable. If we're sharing personal stories, my core belief is that I'm unlovable, right? So for me, it's not so I can experience joy and happiness is fine. But as soon as I experience love, that's when all of those patterns come in that you were just sharing. Mm-hmm. And so you get offered some wonderful advice and tools for when the anxiety is coming in, you know, in those sort of like, when it's protecting us from the very scary, uncomfortable feelings. How about when it's protecting us and anticipating that in that way, right? When it comes in when things are going quote unquote well, when we're experiencing joy or happiness or love or whatever anyone else's core beliefs are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it starts off the same way, recognizing that the anxiety is there to help you, treating it as an ally, saying thank you. Thank you for helping me to deal with this fear that my happiness is going to get taken away, or that the love is going to get taken away, or that I'm going to be abandoned, or whatever it is. And then you can learn what you can from the anxiety, learn about what it's there to do, what it's afraid will happen. And if you have that strong relationship with it, then it will lead to that very vulnerable part of you that believes that you're unlovable, or that you don't deserve to be happy, or whatever it is. And then it becomes inner child work, is what it is, really. Because that part of you, that young part that's holding that core belief, really needs a lot of love, a lot of empathy, a lot of compassion. And when we, as like the adult version of yourself, can provide those things to the child version of yourself, then you start to heal that wound that's in there. And over time, you start to open yourself up to the idea that maybe I do deserve to be happy. Maybe I do deserve love. Maybe, just maybe, I can start to let that in a little bit more.
Beautiful. And, you know, I think we can't talk about this inner child work without talking about trauma, right? And so do you want to say a little bit more about the relationship between anxiety and trauma?
Yeah, for sure. One question that I love to ask my clients is, how old does your anxiety think you are?
Brilliant.
And when I ask that question, the number is typically pretty low. The anxiety thinks that you're like 4, 5, 6 years old. And what we learn from that is that that anxiety developed when you were young as a way of dealing with whatever was going on with you at that time. So not getting sufficient nurturing, protection. Maybe you were dealing with some violence or chaos in the household that you were growing up in. You didn't have a supportive adult that you could turn to. So anxiety oftentimes becomes kind of like the supportive adult to protect you as a child, because you really just don't have any other protection. And that anxiety then stays with you throughout your life. And even when you become an adult yourself and you have more ability to protect yourself, you know, more resources, more options at your disposal to deal with your problems in life, that anxiety still believes that you're that little kid and that it needs to be there to protect you because you don't have any other protection. So a lot of the work is actually helping your anxiety to realize that you are now an adult. And that it doesn't have to protect you in the same way that it needed to back when you were a kid.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I think it's, again, you know, when we're reframing anxiety as there to help you, and now we understand why, right? Like, it makes sense if your anxiety is still stuck in time, just like with trauma, and thinks that you're a kid, that it's trying to protect you from all these big, scary things in the world. And So now that we have that so clear, you know, you talked about, you know, recognizing it, thanking it, but what are some practical coping skills and strategies that you recommend for people who are dealing with anxiety and how to cope with it?
Yeah, I always recommend some kind of breath work practice. So that could be as simple as just doing some diaphragmatic breathing into the belly, because that activates what we call the dorsal vagal nerve, which enables you to be calm in moments when you're feeling like very wound up. So practicing some diaphragmatic breathing so that you can actually calm down the body. And when you can bring down that level of activation, then you can start to engage in the conversation with the anxiety that I talked about earlier, and remembering some key questions that you can ask to your anxiety. So, how old do you think I am? Is one of them. And if the anxiety says, well, I think you're 5 years old, then you can remind your anxiety, well, actually, I'm an adult. Another core question is, what are you afraid will happen if you don't come in to do your job right now? And depending on what the anxiety answers, you validate. And then you can also say, well, is that something that happened a long time ago? Or is that something that happened in the past? Is that something that happened before? And then your anxiety can kind of recognize, oh, yes, that is something that happened in the past. It's not something that's happening right now, but I'm afraid of history repeating itself. And so when you can kind of locate it as something that happened in the past that you're afraid is going to repeat, then there can be a little bit more relaxation that happens. Like, okay, it's not that time anymore. I am not that person anymore. And then another really good thing that you can do is to actually give yourself a hug, or like imagine that you're giving your anxiety a hug. I really like to do this one because sometimes when you invite that sort of affection, you actually realize that the anxiety itself feels very vulnerable. And sometimes the anxiety itself is very young. And so when you can offer that, then you step into the role of being the adult, and you are capable of offering support to the parts of you that are very young and feel very vulnerable. And this serves two purposes. One, it allows the part to feel comforted. And two, it allows you to feel capable of giving yourself what you need and solving your own problems. Because that's another thing, is that anxiety kind of assumes that the problems are like too big to be solved. But when you can step into a role where you feel more capable of solving your own problems, then the anxiety doesn't feel as necessary anymore.
I love that. And I love that piece about giving you yourself a hug and your anxiety a hug, especially. And I think it's really important what you were sharing about how it supports you coming into the adult role, right? Because as we've just discussed, this is a lot of like inner child work. And so, yeah, do you have any advice on making sure that we don't, because it can be very easy when this material comes up to get very identified with the young parts and then to start moving through the world from that young space, which can be a very traumatized part, a very anxious part. So do you have any recommendations on how to, you know, you offered that one about the hug, but are there any others you'd like to add around how to make sure we come into the adult self as opposed to the child self?
Yeah. One thing that you can do is you can do some drawing. So drawing a picture of the child you is helpful to actually separate that part from the adult you. And you can actually do this with a lot of different forms of creative expression. You can draw, you can write, you can play music or sing, you can dance. There's all different ways that you can create some kind of representation of that child part or allow that child part to speak. So then there is a separate creation that's outside of yourself that represents that child part so that you can start to get some space there. Another thing that you can also do is you can even keep a picture of yourself, like a picture of yourself from when you were a kid, and looking at that can actually be helpful to remind yourself, okay, that's me from back then, and that version of me is different from who I am now. And I always like to remind people that it's very normal to have moments where it just feels impossible to separate the adult you from the little you. That's okay. And sometimes we just ride it out. We take deep breaths. We regulate ourselves as best as we possibly can. Use all of the coping tools that you have, go for a walk, listen to music. It will pass. You know, if you use all of those coping tools that you have in your toolbox to regulate yourself when you're feeling really amped up and dysregulated, it's not going to last forever. it's a process of learning to rely on ourselves, to use the tools that we have in our toolbox and trust that everything is temporary. So if you feel stuck in your little kid state, it's not going to last forever. Sometimes our little kid parts really need to feel like very close to us and completely blended with us. They need that to feel safe in some way. So we just trust that they're going to get what they need and it will pass if we can engage in all of the strategies and use all of the learning that we've collected on our healing journey.
I love that idea of trust. I think that that's such an important piece. And, you know, that's what anxiety is often lacking, though, right? You know, it's often there's a lack of trust, and that's what brings up a lot of anxiety. And I'm curious as well, because I love the questions you were offering us to give to the anxiety, right? The how old are you? What's your fear? That kind of thing. And I'm also aware that, you know, anxiety can be very head-based. And as a somatic practitioner yourself, I'm wondering if you have anything you wanted to add about not getting too caught up in like very imaginary mental conversations and how to make sure that we stay grounded and rooted. Because sometimes if we go into our heads in that moment, it can actually like amplify or make it worse.
Yeah. I always recommend, when in doubt, take a deep breath and then take a second deep breath and then take a third one. Because if you get too caught up in your head and just thinking about all of this stuff, it can spiral in this seemingly never-ending way. And to interrupt that spiral, the best thing that you can do is come back to your body. So take a deep breath. See if you can locate in your body where the anxiety is coming up, because usually it's hanging out somewhere. Oftentimes it's in the heart space. And if you can locate it in your body, then you can kind of offer it comfort in a somatic way. So even just putting your hand on your heart and saying, I'm here, I see you, I see that you're scared right now, that can interrupt this cycle of arguing with ourselves, which is something that we get into a lot when we're feeling anxious. If you can let that float away, come back to the body. Okay, where is the anxiety in my body? Can I take a deep breath? Send the breath energy into that space. I'm touching the heart space because that's usually where it comes up. And then we can invite a different energy that's not arguing back and forth with yourself in your head, all of the energy kind of like staying up here. If you can drop down a little bit, okay, where am I feeling this anxiety? Can I take a deep breath into that space? Can I take a second deep breath and a third deep breath? Even spending 10 seconds not engaging in the thoughts can be so transformative for the energy that you're experiencing. And then what I like to do is actually invite people to imagine that the anxiety is stepping out in front of them, stepping outside of the body, so that you can look at the anxiety. And what form does it take? Does it look like a version of you, or does it look like somebody else? That could be information if it looks like another person in your life. Or sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's a little bit more random what it actually looks like. But if you can have it step out and you can look at it, then you can engage in that conversation in a way that is so much more intentional and slow paced, as opposed to if you're just arguing back and forth in your own head.
I love that. I love that, you know, you can engage and have a conversation with your anxiety, which may not be like fully tangible, but you can, without like, while staying connected to your body. So like things you were saying earlier about giving yourself a hug, touching your heart, breathing into your body as you have the conversation, like seeing, visualizing your anxiety in front of you while sensing your body and having the conversation, drawing, writing, you know, all these things which are very both tactile and sensorial, as well as sort of like thought-based. And so I really, really appreciate how you're bringing in both. And I'm curious as well, you know, you've touched up on this a little bit already, but if you have more you want to add around tools to do with thought replacement and positive self-talk as ways of managing.
So thought replacement and positive self-talk can be helpful for a lot of people. So the more like cognitive behavioral therapy approach would be to identify, okay, what's the thought that is causing you to feel anxious? And can we replace it with something else that is more positive or more accurate? That can be helpful. I don't use that a ton in my practice. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this is that I want people to know that if that doesn't work for you, it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. It doesn't work for a lot of people, because trying to logic your way out of the anxiety is kind of missing a lot of the core stuff that's going on underneath the surface, the core wounds from childhood that may be coming up, the young parts that feel very afraid and insecure about what's happening. So I would say if positive affirmations or positive self-talk are helpful for you, then absolutely use them. But there are a lot of times where it feels like you're giving yourself the affirmation, but it's just not like penetrating through the surface. And if that happens, it's okay. That's normal. I think that what's going on there is that either the anxiety or the young part that's underneath the anxiety is kind of saying, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, you're telling me that I'm lovable, but I don't really believe that because I have had this experience in my life that has told me otherwise. And that's why we really need to attend to those core wounds and work with those young parts in a way that validates their experience. Yes, you have been through this life where you learned that you are unlovable because of XYZ things that happened to you or didn't happen to you. And it's unfair that you went through that. And it's okay for you to be angry about it. It's okay for you to be sad about it. Let's just take a moment to feel those feelings rather than trying to push them away. That is so much more therapeutic a lot of the time, I think.
Yeah, I think it's such an important piece to bring in, partially because you're pointing to the fact that, you know, there's a lot of different tools and there's a lot of different people and different things will help different people. And that's why on conferences like these, we offer so many different tools so that people can find things that do resonate with them, knowing that not every conversation and every tool is going to resonate with every person, right? And so positive affirmations are life-changing for some people. And then for others, like you were saying, it can kind of feel like we're being gaslit sometimes by ourselves, right? That kind of, you are lovable, but I don't feel lovable, but you are loving, you know, kind of vibe, whatever it is. And so I think it's really, really important, as you say, to really, find what works for you as an individual and on your own journey, and B, take time to really look at the core and not just like go at it on the, you know, putting a plaster on a deep wound isn't always going to work. And for some people, they've either done enough healing or the wound is different, or, you know, that the plaster does work, or it doesn't feel like a plaster, right? But sometimes, I think people get the gist of what I'm saying. But I really, really appreciate you bringing that piece in around core wounds and how often anxiety is to do with core wounding, and that's what needs addressing.
Of course.
Before we come to an end, is there anything else that you would like to add on this topic?
Yeah, I think that I just want people to know to be patient with themselves. One thing that comes up in the work a lot is some frustration about not being as far along in the journey as you would like to. I have people say, oh, I can't believe I'm still anxious about this, or I can't believe the anxiety is coming up again. I'm doing all of this work. Why is this still happening? And what I always say is that's really understandable that you feel that way. So we validate first. And also, this is a lifelong journey. And that part of you that is getting frustrated that you're not farther along is also there to help you. Because, you know, we believe that all parts are there to help us in some way. And also the part that's getting frustrated is kind of getting in the way of you being able to form that amiable relationship with the anxiety that we're really going for, sort of gets in the way of you being able to form that partnership with it. So I know that patience can be really, really difficult to access a lot of the time, but it really is so important for us to have patience with ourselves when we're on this journey. Because when we can be patient with ourselves, then we can recognize that, okay, I might do a lot of work and the anxiety is still going to come up sometimes. And I can know that that's okay because it's still here to help me. Whenever it comes up, it is here to help me. And I can be ready and willing to be open to having a conversation with my anxiety and learning from it and treating it as a partner rather than getting stuck in this adversarial relationship.
I think that's so important. And again, what you've said many times, and I really hope people hear, is validate, 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 right? And it's mm-hmm. it's really like, yeah, allowing and validating the emotions, and then also seeing which are helpful and which aren't. Like you say, your anxiety is often pointing you towards something and can be helpful and useful in that way. And sometimes a frustration of how far you're going can distract from, you know, the core emotions. So it's validating and then seeing what's supportive to go into.
Yeah, for sure.
Catherine, thank you so much for your time today. How can people find out more about you and your work?
Yes. So you can follow me on social media. I'm on Instagram at therapy.with.catherine. And I am also on TikTok at therapywithcatherine, no periods. So if you go to either of my social media accounts, you can find the link to my website. And on my website, you can also sign up for my newsletter if you would like to. In the newsletter, you'll get announcements about upcoming workshops and courses that I'm doing if you would like to work with me a little bit more.
Fantastic. Thank you so, so much for all of that.
You're welcome.